get rid of the good things and do the God things. How do you do that? Declutter and simplify. You will find purpose when you simplify a lot of the things that you're doing. Now, there's so many different ways to do it, but I know that somebody needed to hear that today.
Where does the path of professional success intersect with spiritual purpose? Today on Seek, Go, Create, we're joined by Shiraz Sadiq, the visionary behind the Christian Business Harvest Network. We'll call it CBHN from now on. Shiraz is on a mission to empower business professionals to not only excel in their careers, but also fulfill their divine destiny through faith. As the author of Well Done, A Passionate Pursuit of Purpose, good alliteration there, by the way, Shiraz advocates for a life that goes beyond the mundane, urging individuals to align their work with God's plan. CBHN stands as a testament to his commitment, offering tools and a community for those seeking to weave their faith into their professional lives. Shiraz, welcome to Seek, Go, Create.
Tim, I got to tell you, I'm going to steal that intro. You make me sound pretty good. I hope they use that when I show up in heaven. And then I can just picture Peter or Gabriel be like, attention, because that was a really good intro and you deliver it pretty good too. Thanks for that intro, man.
Cool, man. Great to have you here. Yeah, I do wonder, I kind of had this vision when you were saying that of like, you know, like this slow clap line when you kind of get to heaven and you kind of like clapping you on. I think a lot of people, and we'll talk about Judgment Day. I love in your book, because I read it just over the last few days. Judgment Day, I kept picturing like Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sarah Connor, okay. Judgment Day. It's not quite that. I know that's what you weren't referring to. I think so many people look at it as like this negative event, but I'm actually thinking there could be a lot of joy there, but I'm getting off track. I'm getting ahead of myself. Shiraz, you and I bumped into each other before. We've talked. I've been on CBHN. We've done some things and had some great conversations, but if someone just bumps into you and they ask you what you do, what do you typically tell them?
I mean, my wife still can't answer that question when somebody asks her what her husband does. When you avail yourself, I see myself as not necessarily a jack of all trades, but a master of none, but being who God needs to be in that moment. Now, that sounds like a little spiritualized and highfalutin. That's not what I mean. It's you develop a passion for people, and then you lean into what Paul said, all things to all people. And if the scenario calls for a bit of mentorship and guidance, well, then let's go there. If it's tactical and practical, well, then let's go there. So what I do is try my best to avail myself as a tool for the people that I get to encounter through the work that I do, whether it's the TV show that we operate, whether it's the food truck that we are about to launch, or the other areas that I'm involved with in ministry. But what I do is try to be that tool. And you know, the best tool that I've learned to be is the one that doesn't exist. I've learned to not do anything if God is saying, this one is for you and the bench, sit this one out.
Is that hard for you to do? Is that hard for you to sit out? Are you wired that way?
That's why I said I'm learning to sit out. There's been too many times in my life where I've gotten in my own way. Because you're always trying to do the right thing. You're always trying to go above and beyond, add value. The old adage, leave a place better than you left it, or leave a place better than you found it. And you always want to leave the fingerprint of God's blessing on something that is in your rearview mirror. And so many times God's like, can you just chill out? I don't think I ever asked you to do that. But all right, you want to go and be extra again? Go ahead. But I didn't really ask you to do that. And so I'm learning. Still, with all these gray hairs, I'm still learning.
So what's interesting, you and I, we've had a few conversations and I think we've clicked. I think we're maybe cut from the similar cloth. We have some different backgrounds, cultural, all that kind of stuff, but seems like we're leaning in the same direction. So I'm going to ask you this because it's something that I think about from time to time. Do you ever wish that you were... And I don't want this to be degrading to the people that have this profession, but I'm going to say, do you ever wish you were just a plumber?
Or, oh my gosh,
just an electrician, or just a blah, 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 especially with the conversation we just had and someone asking the question, what you do? Do you ever wish that? Do you ever think about that at all?
100%. We are wired in similar ways and probably from the same tribe in heaven as well. Definitely. Wow. Okay. My wife is my rock, my anchor, my joy, my reason. She and I couldn't be more different. When we're in social settings, she'll look to me to light up the room and begin conversations, engage, and she enjoys me being social. And she doesn't understand that sometimes I just don't have the energy or the lift to lift the room. And I just want to be a person in the room, not be the reason why the room is vibrating. Like, I want to be, all these years, I thought she always wanted to be more like me, more outgoing, more vivacious. And the entire time, I want to be like her. I want to be the wallpaper. I want to just, can I just be in the room without having to have my presence felt? So I'm with you 100%. And I think you're right. It has to do with your primary function. Well, I'll put it another way. So I have two daughters. They're 19, 21, and my wife. So I live with three ladies. When their hair is curly, they want it straight. When their hair is straight, they want it curly, right? It's almost like you crave what the opposite of what your 90% wiring is. Does that make any sense?
It does. And I think for me, it helps me understand some of my gifting, some of my purpose that I'm pursuing. We're talking about in Well Done here and your little off. It helps me understand it more to attempt to poke holes at who I am. Let's go ahead and dive in the deep end, okay? I want to dive in the deep end because there was something that I kept thinking about as I was reading your book over the last few days. And it's the question that I want to ask, and it's sort of related to this, and I'll just go ahead and ask it. What comes easy for you? What is like easy? From knowing you and being around you, I could guess, but I want to hear it out of your mouth, and then it might lead down a few different paths based on what you say here. So what's easy for Shiraz?
I come from a family who work with their hands. My dad was a millwright mechanic. A millwright, I don't think you have millwrights in the States or not, but in Canada, what the millwright is, they're licensed to do everything. Welding, build a car, build a house. Like, you are literally licensed to do anything when it comes to mechanical engineering or construction. Operate a crane. Like, literally, that's how powerful the millwright license is. Like, my brother has rebuilt his house twice. I was there with the donuts and the coffee and a lot of encouragement. I was given a double dose of this right here. These hands are not my dad's hands, right? I literally, my cousins, my extended family, I'm the only one that was given a double portion of gab, where they all got triple portions of toolbox, right? And so they know how to, but I've learned to lean into what came natural to me. When you grow up in an environment that's opposite, see, when you're a hard worker and you go to work, you punch a clock, you're raised in a home where you work hard, you punch your clock, you come home, you do this, and then you punch your clock. That was my mentality, but it never was congruent with the makeup that God gave me. So I spent so many years of my life fighting my own DNA and design, because I was trying to be something that my environment, my parents weren't bad parents. Don't get me wrong. They would never mean me any harm. That was never it. It's just, they just thought that this was the mold and the cookie cut that all the kids were going to fall into. And so what I started doing is playing with it a little bit. Let me try. But it gets to a point where when you know and you figure it out, you got to start turning the volume down on everything, and more importantly, everyone else.
Mm. So what's interesting is, yeah, you and I are similar. We might want to check some family trees somewhere along the way. I'm not sure. My dad, excellent with his hands, mechanic. He worked in education, but he worked in the vocational trades. He helped people do things and all that, but he was an administrator. And I just, from as early on as I could remember, put me up on a stage in front of people and let me talk. Just let me talk. Now, I do think that there is some conflict there, because what it does is it starts driving us in directions such as, especially if you have a faith ministry, it's like, oh, you could speak. So what you need to do is you need to go into what we would call traditional ministry and things like that. What were some of the things that early on you recognized as like, okay, I'm not this. I don't work with these very well. I work with this. What are some of the pros and cons of having that as a gift?
I think it's universal. I don't think it's only subject to the gift of gab. I think everybody's gifting and bent towards where their sweet spot is absolutely always going to be your greatest blessing and your greatest curse when you don't manage and maintain it. And that goes for actors, celebrities, athletes. If you don't manage and maintain and get better at what God made you better at, there's going to be a problem. And so I don't think it's just unique to talking a lot. Well, it is kind of like this. If there are people who are made and they're great with numbers, and there are other people that should never delete the calculator app off their phone. Like, don't do it. You need the help. There are people who are great at art. This guy, he stopped at stick figures right here. He's like, yeah, no thanks. No thanks. And can you imagine in one of my art class, I think I got like a C or a D on stick figures. I'm joking, but like, that's how bad it is when it comes to being creative with drawing my hands. So I think everybody has already a sense of who they are. And here's one way you figure it out. It's what comes naturally to me. What do I enjoy doing? And if you can lean into that, it will open up curiosity and spark opportunities. But you know what it's going to do? It's going to come to a point where you're going to have to make a decision. You're going to have to decide, is it worth it or not? There is this good, the bad, and the ugly that's going to come with no matter what your gifting is. But you got to decide, is it worth it?
Let's take a short break. I've got a question for you. Are you feeling overwhelmed by challenges in your leadership role? This is Tim Winders from Seek Go Create, and I understand how tough it can be. As an executive coach, I've guided numerous leaders through their toughest moments. Whether it's navigating team dynamics, strategic decision-making, or personal growth, I'm here to help you overcome these hurdles. My clients have broken through barriers they once thought impossible, and you can too. Don't let challenges hold you back. Visit timwinders.com/coaching and book a free discovery coaching call with me directly on my calendar. That's timwinders.com/coaching. Together, we'll forge a path to greater success and satisfaction. Now, back to Seek, Go, Create.
I think to answer your question now very specifically about what comes with talking a lot, you get accused of talking a lot. You talk too much. But isn't that what everybody's accused of if they really lean into their gift? Well, you do it too much. You're doing too much. Is there a line, maybe I'll throw it back to you, that you found with what naturally you've been able to help all these people that you've helped, the organizations and the companies that you've been able to help? How do you straddle that line where, like, you know what, I need them to come to their own conclusion? Hey, horse, there's the water. Or when do you like, oh, here's my right foot of fellowship, now you're in the water? Where's that line that you've been able to figure, okay, how do I dance here?
Well, I think it probably comes back to the whole theme of your book. It's really, we're looking for what our purpose is. And so what we do as we go through life is we do identify those things. Like you said, I agree with you. For as long as I can remember, I love to, and let's maybe spin it positive. I think we're communicators and connectors. I think that's really what we're 100%. Drawn to, is to communicate and connect people. And yeah, we could do that with a microphone like we're doing here. We could do it on a stage. And for me, Shiraz, is real interesting. I know there was a period of time during the 90s where I was speaking in front of a group almost every night, and with a business that I was doing and teaching and training and corporate stuff and all that kind of stuff. And I realized at some point that our superpower can become our kryptonite, because I was leaning extremely heavily on it. And in many ways, it was becoming a drug. And I don't think I was honoring that gifting that I had with what I was doing with it and things like that. Okay. Now, had I recognized that along the way, I think maybe I could have made some adjustments. But what typically happens is God will do something to get your attention. It's the way it worked with me. Okay. And so I do think that it's something that, you know, it's just an awareness, and I think surrounding ourselves with people that can maybe speak into our lives, which I've done well at that at times I haven't. And anyway, I think that's how I would say it.
Here's one of the experiences that I've gone through. This is not a braggadocious or a claim that makes me sound full of myself, but I'm pretty good on a stage with a mic in my hand. I can keep it fresh. I can keep a room jumping alive with a lot of energy. I get to host a lot of business conferences with 2,000-3,000 people in the room, pastored at a few different churches. So yes, when you're in the pulpit, you have that opportunity to speak life and life abundantly into people's very souls. And it's one of those things where, man, you couldn't even pay me to do this, because I'm going to do it anyway, because I'm just so wired to do this. And I love it. Like, you can't pay me to do it, until I started trying to get paid to do it.
Yeah. And so what happened then, when all of a sudden let's bring money into the equation.
Yeah.
Let's bring money into the equation for everyone, because you've got this gift. You believe you've been given it. Now figure out how to bring money into the household, pay for stuff. What happens then?
Yeah. Because the mistake that I had made was thinking that my source was my gift, not recognizing that my source was the giver of the gift. And when I leaned so hard into the gift, it was hard to make money from the gift. And that was a hard lesson for me, because I put all my eggs into this one entrepreneurial venture where I was doing public speaking training, because I'm pretty good at it and had a lot of people. I mean, could you spend time with my staff? Could you train me here? Professors at colleges were like, hey, can you help me design this module so I can present to my students? How do I do what you do? And it got to my head, my heart, where it's like, okay, now my hand is activated and I'm going to start this consulting business and I'm going to train people on how to become more effective communicators. Man, what a mistake. Because now I'm taking the gift and now I'm monetizing the gift that God gave me that wasn't even mine to begin with, instead of just trusting him to open the doors where and when he needed it to be activated and operated. So when I said off the top, when you asked me, okay, what do? That's kind of where I was coming from. What I do is try to avail myself to people and connect them, not on a horizontal, but a vertical level, because you're right, we are communicators and connectors, but connect on a horizontal so I can reconnect them on a vertical level back to their father. Now life is flowing a lot more better, because I'm not trying to monetize the gift on my own. I'm just allowing God to do that.
I'll ask the question, I'll ask the flip side. What's hard for you? Sure. What's really hard?
Accounting. Yeah, like your GST and your HST, doing all your taxes, doing it on a monthly basis, snapping a photo. It's easy, right? You just snap a photo and it just uploads into the app. I don't even make time to snap the photo of the receipt every month to upload it. Anything that is routine and you can go, I hate it. But my accountant is like, just drop off a box of receipts and you're good. Shiraz, I got this. But then when the bill came in at X and it was four figures, I was like, wait, I don't want to pay you this amount. I'm just going to do it on my own. I'm not paying you. I'm going to do it on my own. And then I never get around to doing it on my own, because I'm trying to save money, but I'm realizing that I'm losing time. I'm losing money. I'm losing my peace of mind. So a hard thing that I'm learning, what's hard for me to do, is I don't think that I'm cheap, but I'm frugal. And there's a big divide between cheap and frugal. And so it's hard for me to do is spend money on things that I feel like I could be doing on my own, but I never really have enough time, because I don't measure my time capacity well enough to actually get around to do it. long-winded answer, but yeah, that's what I'm struggling through right now in the season. That's what I'm struggling through.
So at some point when you were younger, so you grew up in the family with, you said you had a lot of people that were, we'll call, skilled with their hands. We'll kind of call it that.
Blue collar is fine as well, by the way. Blue collar is fine as well.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, because I saw it kind of dotted along. And I know you've been involved with ministry, but let me go ahead and hit you with an interesting question that you can answer. I go over to your LinkedIn and I don't see ministry anywhere there. So tell me about the ministry and then maybe layer back why I didn't see it over on your LinkedIn. I think your LinkedIn's a little bit old. You probably, like me, you probably don't go update it that often, but is that too hard of a question there? It's like, hey man, where's the ministry? Come on, man.
Not at all. You get to a point where if you're secure in your marriage, you have to walk around telling people that you're married. That's weird to me. Been married 25 years. We just celebrated 25 years. You don't see a wedding ring. If my heart isn't married to my wife, what is my ring supposed to prove to the world? And my wife is cool. Like, she's totally fine with me not wearing my wedding ring. If I was wearing different rings, it would mean, hey, you're wearing that ring, but not your wedding ring. That would be an issue. I just really could never get comfortable with my wedding ring. I just couldn't do it. It's fine. My in-laws had a problem with that. That's another story. But so like with my relationship with God, I'm good with God. Like, me and him, I feel like we got a good thing going. Am I going to try to prove that to everybody in the world? This is what I found. So there's this one church that I was pastoring at. I was an associate pastor. I wasn't the head pastor. Church in just outside of Toronto called Humberley. What up, Humberley family, if you're listening in? And while I was pastoring there, I was working full-time at this telecommunications company. I was their national sales manager. So I had about 3 or 4 teams and, I don't know, maybe 20, 30 people rolling up and just managing a bunch of different things at different times, right? And this is what I found when I was there. While at this company, when I say record setting, I not only did I break and then I reset every sales record. You talk about God's favor on your life. It was just powerful. And people would constantly come up to me, Shiraz, what is your secret sauce? What is it that gets you all these wonderful results? Can you tell us your strategy? And deadpan, look up. So they came to my desk. I didn't go to them. They came to my desk. And Tim, it was simple. I just deadpan, look in the face like, God really likes me.
You're his favorite.
And it was really interesting because I would get two distinct responses always. It was like, uh-huh, Scarab's gone. Like end of conversation. Or, what do you mean? And those what do you means meant so much to me in those 4 or 5 years that I was doing both, because I held both roles at the same time, pastoring and full-time at this telecommunications company. And so this is a difference that I found. My desk tended to be a greater magnet than my pulpit. So when you're preaching, you have to invite people to sacrifice the rhythm of their life if they hadn't already come to the full revelation of who God is and who Jesus is and what he had done for all of us. You have to make an effort to break your Sunday routine, put some nice clothes on and get to church. Okay. But if you're already at work, so I began to wonder what was more powerful, my pulpit or my desk.
Hmm.
And so as soon as I put up a sign, so it bothered me that people would walk away just because I said, God really likes me. And so I didn't want to repel people, but I continue to want God's glory on my life, because in Isaiah, when it says the kings will come to the brightness of your dawn, kings, your gifts will make room for you before kings. And so when I began to just allow the favor of God on my life to perform through sales results and watching people flock because kings come to the brightness of your dawn, your gifts will make room for you. People were flocking to my desk. I got to tell you, it was a struggle to get them to church on a Sunday. And so what was I supposed to do now? The people that walked away, that it bothered me that people would walk away just because I said God likes me. So LinkedIn is meant to be, hey, when I'm active, haven't been for a little bit in transition with one of the roles that I'm doing from a media perspective. So when I get back on that, I'll be more active on LinkedIn. But what it's meant to be is like, hey, I remember that Shiraz guy. Let me go check him out and see him. But as soon as you're going to meet me, we're talking about God. And so I found that keeping my desk neutral, but our communication right on point makes a big difference for me. Now, do I think everyone should prescribe to that approach? No. I'm wired to be able to, the duality of my existence being corporate and ministry at the same time, I can rock both worlds at the same time. Took me years to figure it out, but I can do both effectively. Sometimes it was bifurcating and bipolar in my mind to be able to do both, but I've learned over time how to be both. And again, back to us saying off the beginning, to be all things to all people. So I've learned, but both of them are going to be a gateway to a vertical connection.
Right, because you're a connector and your ultimate connection is to connect people with their creator, their God. So you did spend some time in full-time ministry also, didn't you? Mm-hmm. Didn't you do, so you've kind of been in and around. I think I remember learning about some of your early years. So one question I always have with people that have been around what we would call, air quotes here for those that can't see the video, I've got air quotes, traditional ministry or the full-time ministry role. Many people assume that that is the ultimate, that is the pinnacle of a spiritual walk with God, is to be in a full-time ministry role. And we discuss this quite often here, so this is not a new topic for the listener. At times, there are people that when they leave that role, they go through some degree of, I failed, or God may not be pleased, or people come up to them and say, oh, I'm sorry, brother, but you must have backslid or something like that. I think you went back and forth some. If you want to share a little bit of that story here, that's fine. But point, see, you're probably like me. You don't consider yourself not in ministry now. But at some point, you disconnected with what many would consider traditional and or full-time ministry. What was that like?
I mentioned my family being all workers, my dad's side. My mom, when I was young, she was Muslim when my dad married her. And so when she came to the full knowledge and revelation of who Jesus is, man, there's one thing to grow up around Christianity, but there's another thing to grow around in a different faith and then have that moment where like Jesus just walks into your life and just loves you like you've never been loved before. So she was crazy lady Christian, right? Like she was just like went all out. Because again, when you have been around the concept of Christianity, you might take it for granted. But for her, she never did, because she knew what it was to live out. So for her, the greatest achievement in her life, other than the grandkids, because we stopped existing when we all had kids, was when I became a pastor. That was her great crowning achievement. She'd call it. Did you see my beta? That means son, he is pastor. Like, so she was like, so like always beaming with such pride because her son was a pastor. So for her, it was a really big deal. Not to say that it wasn't for me, but for her, it just meant the world for her. Growing up, my uncle, so this is on my dad's side, planted the very first Desi church in Canada. Desi is a term that encompasses Pakistan and India. And the church was, the language was Urdu, which is in Pakistan, and Punjabi, which is in India. And so they would speak their dialects of the same language effectively. And I'm 19. He's training me to kind of take over the ministry, not take over, but join him in ministry. And because we were always around and like, hey, let's send you to seminary. And so I'm 19 and I'm going off to seminary. Like it's everything set, like, let's go. And I asked a simple question one Sunday afternoon, and this changed my life forever. This one Sunday afternoon, we're at my uncle's house again, the pastor, a few other leaders are there. We're talking about the summer outreach programs. When you consider outreach in those days, it was specifically to an Indian and Pakistani community, which would be predominantly Hindu, Muslim, or Sikh. The population of that is quite large in the GTA, the Greater Toronto Area. And how do we do this outreach? And this plan and that plan and this plan and that plan. Tim, I asked a simple question and they came for me. How are we going to pay for this? You have no faith. what is this? And I'm looking around and I just looked at this one person that said, I don't even know where this came from. It's like, I don't know how to fish. I'm not going to go find gold coins in a fish's mouth. I just asked a simple question. I was so frustrated that this was a Sunday. By the Monday, I figured out a way. Now, enrollment and acceptance was already done because it's June. School starts in September. I'm done high school, got into a community college and went into marketing. Said, forget this. I don't want anything to do with this ministry. They don't even have the ability to do this. 4 years later, I'm pastoring at a church, a different church. And so God has a sense of humor. And so I've been able to bring that flavor into the house. One of being fiscally forward, meaning let's go and generate as much income as we can for ministries to fulfill the vision that God has through the pastor of that house. I don't care what house, what where your pastor has a vision for what they want to accomplish, but how are we going to pay for it? And that created my drive for CBHN, for example, is to help every person make as much money as possible with two conditions. With two qualifiers. What are you willing to do to make that money? Say you establish your moral ground, establish it and maintain it and don't question your integrity. What are you willing to do to get it? And secondly, what are you going to do with it? And as long as you can answer those two questions, I feel like that Sunday afternoon still shapes me to this day, right? To ensure that everybody makes as much money as possible to pay for their pastor summer outreach program. Yes, help out charities and do all those things, but your local church, man, God created that for us to be able to. But as an effective communicator, I did, by the way, in my 30s, go back and get my master's in theology because that's still a part of me. I have pastored at three different churches since, or in total, three churches since, but never as a head pastor. So I've always had this sweet spot where I'm able to be in ministry and in the corporate world at the same time, because I'm not the senior pastor. I'm coming alongside for a season. I don't know who that was for, but I just want to give you the liberty that you matter. And if you're listening today, listen, I just want to remind you, there are 12 tribes of Israel. Only one of them were priests. So what value does that represent for all of the rest of us? When the Bible calls us, we are a king, priest, royal priesthood unto God, meaning we're king and priest. Yeah, some people just have a higher percentage king. Some people just have a higher percentage priest, but we're both and we will always be both because we are royal king side and priest, right? Because that's what we are. But 11 out of 12, your percentage for king is higher than your priestly side. But again, we're both. So if you are part of the 11 of the 12, which means the majority of the people, that means we need to empower as many people as possible to pursue their purpose. Not in church, not in Christendom, but within their giftings and their DNA so they can go and conquer in the marketplace to release the blessings and provide for the vision of the priest, meaning the provision for the vision. And I apologize for getting too excited and passionate, but at the core of it, that's what I live for, is to make sure that we can pay for all these pastors' visions that exist that God has raised up across the globe.
Yeah, I like that. I pulled your string there. I was hoping I could do that. I could get you kind of worked up there.
Yeah, you pulled it.
And,
yeah.
And I love the example of the 11 out of the 12 tribes. And if you want to jump over to the New Testament of the 12 that Jesus surrounded himself with, what he went out and got the dirty fisherman and he I don't want to say he maybe not didn't pick his accountant well, but you know that was probably part of the plan. But
But we know
who he picked there. So here's the big question that I think you are looking to address with the book. I think it's the big question that our listeners have, probably the people that you interact with, people I interact with. It's how do I step into, how do I identify, how do I know what my purpose is? And we could start talking about the book here. We could talk about, I know what you do with CBHN. How do I know that I'm supposed to go get a food truck?
Here we go. Are you ready?
Tell me about the food. What? Did the skies part?
Yeah.
And you said,
let's go. Are you ready? I'm going to be long-winded in this one. I'm going to take it because this was revolutionary for me. I'm going to work backwards. I'm going to start from about 4 weeks ago. So whatever time we're filming this in the year, about 4 weeks ago, I was reading in Genesis where Jacob decides, hey, I got to get away from Laban. So if you're familiar with the story, it's Genesis 30, 31, 32. And Jacob had just tricked his brother and he is now takes off and he's living with his uncle because his brother wants to his brother wants to kill him basically because he took his brother's blessing. So this entire time he's walking around with somebody else's calling on his life. Woo! We'll get into that in a moment. All right. So he's walking around with his brother's calling that God never intended for him. All right. The very thing. So Jacob ends up tricking his dad, if you know the story. Well, guess what happens to him? With siblings. Guess what happens to him on his wedding night? His uncle tricks him and does a sister-sister swap. He did a brother-brother swap. So his uncle does a sister-sister swap. So he ends up, long story short, with two wives. And his uncle doesn't treat him really well, but God still blesses him even though he wasn't being treated well. Okay, so let's fast forward. He takes off. Laban's like, what? Boy, you ain't going nowhere. I'm going to get you. And he rallies up all his people and they're chasing down Jacob because for whatever reason, he's just going to go get him and take back whatever. Okay, so he's all mad. And Laban, at a time of rest on his as he's pursuing him, God shows up in a dream. This is what it says. Oh my God. Oh my gosh. This is what it says to him. This is what God says to Laban. He says, don't say anything. I think it's verse 24. He says, don't say anything bad to Jacob. That's not what it says. It says, don't say anything bad or good to Jacob. What the crack is this? Sorry, that crack is my Christian swear word. I was like, what is this right here? Don't say anything bad or good. I thought it was okay to do good things. I thought it was okay to bless people. I thought it was okay to always do good things. At the end of the day, you bring up your pile of good things and you put it before God and say, here's my 84 years on the planet. Judge me now. And when God said, don't do anything good or bad to Jacob. And I began to just peel that back and peel that back and peel that back. But evaluating, that was the starting point, is me. God, okay, in mirror time, what's going on here? And I'm just checking myself out in the mirror saying, okay, so what's going on here? What am I seeing? Food truck, this is where food truck finally revealed itself, is because I stopped doing a bunch of good things. I peeled back all the extra stuff that I'm doing. I just simplified my life and got rid of the bad. Don't do anything good. I got rid of the good. And that's where my next steps just kind of revealed themselves because I simplified my life. And I assure you, if you're listening in today, you know what I mean by simplifying your life, decluttering your life, clearing out your garage, you'll finally find that thing that you were looking for that you didn't even know that you needed. But as soon as you declutter and simplify, you will find what you're looking for. And that's one of the reasons why I was eager to get on with Tim today, because I knew that somebody needs to hear that. Declutter, forget the bad stuff. That's obvious. Unfortunately, in our religious natures, we're always measuring our scale out of 0 to -10. And we're trying to stay away from the worst sins like murder and adultery. Perhaps lying is a -3. Perhaps break even is a good point. But God is even saying, evaluate all the pluses that you do. And if they don't line up with what I made you to do, it's not going to go well for you on judgment day. Mm. Get rid of the good things and do the God things. How do you do that? Declutter and simplify. You will find purpose when you simplify a lot of the things that you're doing. Now, there's so many different ways to do it, but I know that somebody needed to hear that today. I just really want to make sure that I can express that.
I think that's powerful. And there's so much symbolism. I almost didn't say that. Symbolism with the food truck that I'm going to ask a little bit more about in just a second, but
sure.
You know, you do, and I know you're aware of this. You're talking to a guy who lives in a 39-foot motor coach, and this is our home. And we just celebrated our 5-year anniversary of living here. We've been traveling for 10 years, but we've been fairly minimalist with stuff.
Okay.
But Shiraz, I did something else. I actually am coming to believe maybe that is an outward manifestation of cluttering that goes on internally, all the stuff we have, the garages we fill up, the storage units. I'm sure in Canada, y'all have one of the most popular businesses or storage units because people have run out of space to store their stuff at their homes and their basements, their garages. Can't even get a car in their garage anymore. They're now putting it in storage facilities. But I'm coming to realize how cluttered we are inside, our minds, our souls, our hearts. And one of the things I did, it's going on about 4 months ago, is I cut out a lot of what I was consuming, news, information. And I realized that I was addicted to information. It was an addiction. I went through it. It was the month of October, the tail end of 2023. I decided I wasn't going to drink some alcohol and I wasn't going to read all my news and stuff like that. The alcohol I'm not addicted to. I could have a sip of something every once in a while and be fine. The information, I had cold sweats almost after about 2 or 3 days because I wasn't able to read all the stuff that I had in front of me. My mind is so much clearer now. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about, and this is, we're going to ease into the book here. Talk a little bit about how important it is to unclutter our minds to get to this place of where our purpose is. I think most people can't get to it because they're listening to too many. I'm going to say something that might be controversial. Too many preachers, teachers, reading this latest spiritual book, reading all the self-help, you know, the greatest, latest, greatest. And I think we got too much going on. Talk about that some, Shiraz.
I honestly feel that in North American church culture context, we potentially could be more educated beyond our ability to implement. We know more than, if we simply applied 20% of the goodness of God that we already have come to know, we could change the world, just 20%. And yet there is an addiction, as you said, to information. There's an addiction to X, Y, Z. Potentially, there's an addiction to the rhythm, the rhythmatic nature of what it means to be a Christian. You go to church on a Sunday to hear. You go to church on a Sunday to hear. Maybe there's a podcast on the other week. And so just the whole concept of spiritual constipation is real. A lot going in, but how much coming out? Last night, my wife and I, we got to spend some time with some old friends. He runs a Canadian division. It's a global organization called Voice of the Martyrs. And a lovely couple, I'll leave their names out of it, but look them up, Voice of the Martyrs. They help the persecuted church around the globe. We were just talking about what we feel like God is doing in our lives. And this is what the husband said last night. He said, I felt like God was saying, so I was like, wait, what? He felt like God was saying, so he did something about it. For him, in his particular motion, he's like, I got to slow down. So he happened to be traveling. So he didn't jump on the Movator, the people mover. He just walked beside it on purpose and cold sweats, the way that you described it. He was having those cold sweats. But he heard and he did. He heard and he did. He heard and he did. The whole concept of decluttering, what you were saying, just even our minds, like we live in an age where we're bombarded by messaging like we've never been before. Access to messaging is incredible. Just pick up your device. And it's hard to get off of it as soon as you picked it up. Because, hey, has this ever happened to you, audience? You pick up your phone to do A and then you find yourself doing B. And then you can't even see your way back to A because you don't even remember what A was. That's happened to me. I'm not preaching to nobody. I'm calling myself out. This is just the world that we live in because we have access to all of this information. It's going to take discipline to cut back, to declutter. Now, an effective way to simply declutter is remind yourself of who you are. Somebody described me this way, and Tim, I'm going to connect you, if I haven't already, to Dr. Franz. He's just an amazing human being. He's like this double psychology. It's like big brain, smart person. I think you guys will have great conversations. We call ourselves, each other, we call ourselves shovel sharpeners. Okay. And this is the way I'll describe it. If God gave you a hill and said there's gold in that hill, is it enough that he gave you a hill? Oh, I'm sorry. So God is all supposed to give you a GPS and put your shovel in the ground and do the work for you. No. Then why are we here? Why do we have oxygen? Why did he make muscles in our arms? Why do we have a head? Why do we have a heart? Why did he tell us to be strong and be courage and go for it? Put your shovel in the ground. I don't have a secret recipe for you to find your purpose. I'm telling you, put your shovel in the ground. I'm saying it's time you get your shovel in the ground. Move some dirt out of the way. Keep digging, because you're going to find two things. This is what you're going to find. You're going to find your gold. Because if you're going to put your shovel in the ground, you're guaranteed to find what you're looking for. But are you going to put your shovel in the ground? Are you waiting for the next? Another good friend, she always says to me, she's a nutritionist. She said, it's weird because I don't teach anything new, but people always want to know how to lose weight. People know how to lose weight, Tim. Be more active. Here's a formula. Be more active and eat better. Simple. But people want to know the magic pill. That's what they're after. But they're not after putting the shovel in the ground. Put the shovel in the ground. Day by day, put your shovel in the ground. So I'm not going to give anybody a recipe. But what I will give you is just some encouragement to put your shovel in the ground, because you're going to find two things. You will find two things as soon as you get your shovel in the ground. You're going to find your gold, but you'll also find the assassin in the sand. Most people have this desire, Tim, to find their purpose. But there's always this moment where we're going to hit where we're like, I don't know what's holding me back. I don't even understand what's holding me back. There's an assassin in the sand that sabotages our ability to move forward. It's like we do it for 3 weeks, but that fourth week, how do you get past those shakes after 2-3 days of being off the news? That's the assassin, man. Like, there's always this pushback, blowback to keep us the same size. Won't get into neuroscience, but it's a homeostasis in our brain that says, hey, stay the same, stay the same, stay the same. But God has called us to so much more than that. And you pulled another string on me, buddy. You did. And it's like, again, you're going to find two things. I refuse to give people the answer that's already in them. How do I know the answer is already there? Because in every acorn is the ability to become an oak tree. In your DNA, before the foundations of the earth, he says in Psalm 139, that we were fearfully and wonderfully already knitted in our mother's womb. He's already put the DNA in us. That purpose isn't an external additive like a cloak. It is an internal explosion that comes from within. Activate that. How do you do that? Get your shovel in the dirt. Now I better stop or else I'm going to keep on going.
So you don't have like a 3 steps to purpose, 7 steps. This is A, B, C, D. Listen, here's part of our culture. We do have, you mentioned the North American, I'll sometimes say first world culture. Our North American first world culture, they're looking for the easy button. At times I'm looking for the easy button. I'm looking for where's the easy button? We're looking for the easy button. And what I heard you say, it's not hard, but it's not easy either. And if I look out over the horizon, if I'm consuming too much stuff, I'm going to hear someone talk about the easy button. And I will, in all likelihood, gravitate towards which one?
Human nature.
The easy button. So somewhere along the way, Shiraz, speaking of something that I don't think is easy, because I've written a book and you've written earlier, you mentioned you're not an artist. See, I think to put words on paper like you did, there's art to that. I think it's shovel in the ground stuff too, by the way. I think writing a book is shovel in the ground. But so you've got the book here, Well Done, A Passionate Pursuit of Purpose. Alliteration there. You're an alliteration guy. Is that you?
Mm-hmm. Love it.
Could you
love
come
it
up with like 3 or 4 more P words just in the...
I could have, but you know,
a plethora of passionate pursuit of purpose. Now tell me how it originated, because here, and let me, I'm going to layer it with something. Often people that have a gift of speaking, taking that and putting some of their thoughts on paper is a difficult thing to do. Or we will talk ourselves out of it because we could do a microphone and do these things. What was that like and why did you decide to do it? And then we'll talk a little bit about the book before we start wrapping up here.
Why? We were in Orlando and we were back in the room. My wife looks at me. So we were staying in this nice little place and like a Airbnb, and I was on the balcony and my wife just pops her head out And I was doing some writing like I'm prone to do, just my own journaling, but I don't call it journaling. It's called my writing. And my wife pops her head out and says, "Man, are you finally going to write that book?" Like, what? I thought you were making, coffee? What? Like, what? That was it. I didn't realize that I'd been writing with all the sermons and messages that I've had, been privileged and fortunate to be able to share different churches and other venues I had written. But it's a completely different art form to write than it is to speak. And you know this full well. You can put so much more emotion and tonality, facial expression, passion, juice into and reinforce with power every word, but you can't do that in black and white. It just changes everything. And so learning how to do it was one step. I didn't write it to be an author. I didn't write it so I could write it. I wrote it so it could be read. I was very excited when we cut out 80 pages. It was 82 pages we cut out of the book. If you look at the average person, we didn't write this for readers. It was written to somebody who doesn't necessarily read that often. So it's just 10 chapters. Each chapter is about 12 to 13 pages. We wanted it to be read. We didn't want it to be written. And so with that objective in mind, we made it so that every person had the ability and the capacity to be able to receive what they need from it. And so when we wrote it that way, it changed everything. And you'll know this when you sell a book, the sales just go poof, whoop, and they're back up there. And now they're on this like steady incline. And like with it, when you're on Amazon, it's just interesting. You got Australia, New Zealand, places in Africa, South America, all across the States, the Canadian market to me was okay. That makes sense because maybe one or two people know me here. But to see it just sell around the world didn't make sense. But I'm glad that we did the project. And when I say we, I couldn't have done it without my wife's support because of all the sacrifices that are necessary because I'm not naturally a writer. I'm a communicator. And so the objective was to translate what this would communicate, but do it in writing. And so we hope that we are able to accomplish that mission.
Something that's interesting for me during a process like that, we've talked about ability to communicate and I think I've come to terms that part of what I'm doing here, part of what I'm doing in other areas, at times I feel as if I'm doing it for other people, for their information, etc. Mm-hmm. But Shiraz, I'm like coming to this place where a lot of what, and this is kind of for creators, by the way, I'm kind of saying this. Okay. We kind of have this thought of we're entertaining or educating or getting information out to the world to have impact and blah, 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 blah. I'm becoming more and more convinced that what I'm doing right here, right now is for me.
Okay.
And when I wrote, I think I came to the, it sells and all that kind of stuff. We'd always love to sell more probably, but I'm wondering if it was for me. What transpired with you, not what everybody else is reading, what transpired with you while you were in the process of writing and putting this down?
When you look at whether it's organizationally, corporate, small business, or individually, church, every single time, and I saw this and it just blew my mind. I never had seen this. And this was while I was still writing the book and it changed everything. If you look at somebody's mission statement or vision or purpose statement, every single one is for the benefit of others. Check it. If you read your own, if you read everyone's mission or vision or purpose statement, it's always to the benefit of others. Companies will talk about their clients. Churches will talk about their parishioners, whatever they want to call them, their congregation. Individuals, I want to live a life of, pass a legacy on to my kids. But it's always to the benefit, a real purpose statement has someone else in mind. Mm. And so that's what helped me with that moment of like, okay, I really got to write this with the audience in mind. Did I do a good job of that? Time will tell. I'm working on the second and the third book right now, and there's already a bit of a demand for the second one. So it'll get out there in the next few months. I'm looking forward to that. But I think it's the main feedback when you hear like, man, you were reading my life. Like, that's exactly where I was. And when you start hearing stuff like that from people from around the world, it's kind of like, oh, okay. And it reminds you of that moment, what you're describing, mission, purpose, vision. It always has other people in mind.
One of the things that I did is I went through and did some highlighting, and I think we're going to wrap this up here. I'm going to ask you about one statement, but I just want to mention a few highlights that I think will help people get a flavor. One of the highlights I had was, but the busyness of life, this relates back to what we were talking about earlier, cluttering. The busyness of life is desperately trying to weigh you down with logistical family obligations, probably a lot of other obligations. Another highlight, one of the most common prayer requests I receive, this is you talking, is for clarity about a person's calling and for direction for their destiny. That gives somebody the flavor of this book called Well Done. But I want us to wrap up with one item that I highlighted, and I want you to just tell this story, because this is like my thickest highlight in the book. Okay, you ready for this?
Okay.
I still have a vivid memory of sitting on the toilet as a toddler when suddenly one of my dad's pet pigeons flew in through the window. I'm sorry, man. That's a sentence that just screams, tell me more.
Oh, man. The things that you didn't want to make the cut made the cut. And that's in the book. Yeah. And not only that, you figured, okay, hopefully nobody remembers that. But here it is.
Do we need to edit this out? Do I have to edit this out? Because see, to me, that tells me someone who is relating and sharing, and it leads into something. I'll let you share if you want to now what it leads to. But I also know that there's someone sitting here going, I got to get this book now.
Yes, I love you for that, Tim. That was awesome. Yeah, and freaking out. I'm sitting there and I'm like, I don't know, 2, 3. But I mean, it's weird. I have memories since when I was less than a year old. And my mom was like, how do you know that? And it's kind of cool. And I remember freaking out. We lived in a city called London, Ontario. I was actually born in London, Ontario. And my dad had pet pigeons, of course. And whose dad doesn't have pet pigeons?
Well, I mean, to me, I'm sitting going, pet pigeons, what the?
This is, my dad was a hunter. So he had a lot of animals, but he had a lot of guns too. Hunting guns. And I know that's controversial for some folks in Canada and in the States, but whatever. It's my dad. Love him. He's gone. Probably hanging out with Jesus right now. And so he had birds. He had a bunch of different stuff around. So when it came in the window, I was just freaking out. And he's like, well, then just get up. I was like, I was paralyzed in that moment. Because the thing that always kept me back was in this situation took in the form of a bird. But it's what kept me back from just simply going to unlock the door to let my dad in to get the bird. Because I'm yelling, freaking out. They're like, what's going on? But I had locked the door. I was old enough to lock a door. And I'm sitting on the toilet, door's locked. And he's like, well, just unlock the door. But in between me and the door was my fear. A harmless pigeon that was probably more afraid of me than I was of it, but it stood between me and the door. And the only thing that got me to the door was my dad leaning up against the door. And you know how when you lean against it, there's a little crack that creates if you push it. And just I could hear a deep voice saying, it's going to be all right. Just come and open the door first. You're going to be fine. You're going to be fine. You're going to be fine. And then all through my life, there's moments like that where I remember my dad saying to me, you're doing too much. You're making too much out of the negative. It's not that big. Just come and unlock. The fear that's in between where you stand and where your purpose is, it's actually not that hard. Just get up and unlock the door. It's as soon as you unlock that door, son, I will rush in. And again, there are people listening today, as soon as you just stand up for God, watch him stand up for you. Watch him take care of what was fake anyways. There's never power in the fear or the pigeon or whatever you feel stands in between you and your purpose and your destiny. But I tell you who wants you to succeed more than you do. If God sent you for a reason and on purpose to the planet, it would make sense that he would love to see his sons and daughters fulfill those dreams that he impregnated you with. He's like the proudest one ever to be able to say, hey, look at what Tim and his wife do. Can they just be a model? Hey, left side of heaven, they have decluttered. They dropped everything. They've been in an RV for 5 years. Did you send them a cake, Michael? Michael, send them a cake. Like, let's celebrate what's going on in that RV. You think I'm playing, folks? No. They literally live the definition of what it means to just, you think they're off the grid? They're not off the grid. They're on the internet right now. They're not off the grid. They're off the goods that people thought was good for them. And when we can relinquish the barns that we're storing up and laying up treasures, and now they're storing up and laying up treasures in eternity and continue to do so all these years, man, there's so much liberty and freedom from letting go and not empowering the things that we think we need or the things that are getting in the way of what we think we need. It's just a beautiful scenario. And so it goes on to share a few more opportunities that you'll have to also step into who God is for you and what God really wants from the relationship that you have with him.
Yeah, see, I'm glad that I highlighted that sentence. It's going to trigger. Someone's going to actually remember that. They'll remember it, which is good. Don't be mad at me because I brought that one up. Don't be upset.
Not at all.
The book's well done, A Passionate Pursuit of Purpose. Shiraz, why don't you tell us who it's for and where people can find it? Just kind of who it's for, who you think might be the person that needs to get the book. I mean, and I know it's everybody, but you know what I mean by that.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think the book is for, I wish it was for everybody because that's what every author wants, but it's not. It's for someone who's been Christian long enough to know that there's more in their core to explore, but they're not old enough to have been jaded by disappointment or jaded by what sometimes can happen when you fall into a church context and then you begin to, it's sad when start people blaming the church and saying a phrase like the problem with the church is this, then this book isn't for you because you're putting your own pigeons in the way of the proliferation of God's gift in your life. It's not never about the church or the pigeon. It's about you. And so it's somebody who's been Christian for a number of years to understand that there's more that they can enjoy and experience in God, but they're not old enough that they've been beaten up by this world, because this book isn't for you. If you feel that there's a problem with God and the church, this book isn't for you. You have other books that'll be more beneficial to help you get through those layers and then get on to discovering and recapturing the beauty that what God is for you. And that's who this book is for.
Yeah. Like I said, I read it. Excellent book. I don't want to say it's an easy read because it does have depth, but it's a good flowing read, and it leads from one step to another. It's like a bit of a dance with the movement and the information provided, and I enjoyed it. Make sure you get a copy of that. Hey, Shiraz, we are seek, go, create, those three words. I'm going to allow you to pick one over the other two and tell me why you picked that word. Just resonates with you or you like it or something. Seek, go, or create. Which one do you choose?
Yeah, pick one. Okay.
You got to pick one.
Okay. A philosophy I live by, it's just a offshoot of faith. But for me, it's jump and build your wings on the way down. I don't recommend that. I'm not prescribing that for anybody else. But for me, this guy, I do it often. I jump and build my wings on the way down. So I'd probably pick go and then create on my way down and then seek a soft landing. So I will definitely say go. That begins most of my journeys, for good or bad. It begins most of my journey. So I'm still that go guy. And then I try to create my wings to seek out where this flight is going to take me. But it's always a go. Yeah.
Very good. Thank you for that, Shiraz. Check out Well Done, A Passionate Pursuit of Purpose. Get that. We'll have links and everything. I guess people can get it anywhere, right? Amazon, all those places, right?
Amazon's easiest. We can get it from our website, but I think Amazon's easiest and most efficient for most people.
Good. We'll include the links down to the website and also CBHN. Check that out. That's good information over there. Great conversations going on there. And just, I appreciate the conversation and I appreciate the connecting that we have been able to do with the conversations we've had over the last few months. We are Seek, Go, Create here. We release new episodes every Monday. Your support does mean a great deal to us. If you would like to support us financially or leave a note and give us some information about you, you can do that at seekgocreate.com/support. That's seekgocreate.com/support. Go there. You can leave us as little as a buck. You could give me some money to buy me a cup of coffee or something like that. We welcome that and we would appreciate it. We have new episodes every Monday. Until next time, continue being all that you were created to be.